This is Tall Tale TV, your podcast for sci-fi and fantasy short stories. This story has multiple parts. To listen to the entire story in one place, visit talltaletv.com/series. Of Portals and Portents by Leslie Herron. Chapter 16, Epidote.
What do you mean the multiverse is collapsing?
Piper's hand flipped to her mouth, her fingers pushing against her lips, holding back a dry heave. She struggled to wrap her brain around all the information her brother had just fed her. 15 minutes of mind-numbing, soul-crushing gobbledygook, and she was ready to hurl herself into that chasm.
What even is a multiverse?
I can explain that one.
Winter sat up straight, a wicked smile carving across his face.
I remember that topic from a podcast I listened to recently. It was hosted by Neil deGrasse Tyson. He's an astrophysicist, and he postulates that, can it, Fido?
Piper resisted the urge to shudder at that toothy smile, and settled for turning away instead.
Okay, so this multi-what's is going to kill everyone. How do we even stop something like that?
Well, we have to find the cause of all this, and then Unit 2 and I can try to repair the damage.
Atticus chewed on his lip for a moment, his eyes flickering between their traveling companions and his sister. Piper raised an eyebrow.
Repair it how?
With science!
A mad gleam sparkled in Atticus's innocent face.
See, if we calculate the... no way!
Evan moved to the center of the room. He thrust his hand up towards the boy in a warning gesture.
No more nerd speech. Just keep it to yourself. We know where the problem is. I'd be willing to bet my granny's glass eye that this is Eric and the King's doing. Good thing we was already headed that way. Now we just have to save the multiverse along with Vel.
A cold dread ran down Varen's spine as he rubbed at his mouth with a hand. He wasn't ready to face his brother. Not yet. What would he even say? Evan spun, glancing up at the tall, cracked window behind him.
Hey, looks like the storm let up. We ready to head out?
I was wondering.
Winter stood from his corner, moving to the small group with apprehension. His eyes danced between the pint-sized mercenary and the angry woman with the metal arm.
Can I tag along?
He knew they were strangers, and odd ones at that, but this felt more safe than wandering the wilds alone.
I don't know where I am, and y'all have a better chance of getting me home than I do on my own.
Piper pointed off towards the south.
We're headed that way, since that will keep us out of the storm. You can follow if you want.
But you said something about a safe passage across the ravine, right?
Winter pulled a face as he gestured off behind him with a jab of his finger.
I wouldn't recommend going that way, then. That's the direction I came from, and that fissure just keeps getting wider the farther you go.
Groaning, Piper fought to keep her gaze away from the prince, but he took a step forward, grabbing her attention. His face was plastered with that smug, self-satisfied look of, I told you so. She jabbed him back a step with her mechanical finger.
For the record, I technically didn't disagree with heading north. We would be heading that way, after we crossed the ravine and avoided the storm.
A single eyebrow crept up Varen's smug expression.
You just want to go back and rescue those stuffy floaters.
Maybe it was the way her pouting face reminded him of the queen, possibly her stubborn demeanor, but Varen felt a tickle of anger and frowned. He locked eyes with her before he gave a slight but firm nod of his head. He pulled out his slate and tapped out, They will not survive on their own, and I won't have them dying in my lands. Piper felt her resistance crumble under that stern look. It was the same one Vel used that told her to stop being difficult. She may be ornery, but she knew he was right.
Fine. We can rescue them
if we find him on the way.
She pursed her lips and folded her arms with an audible snort. She wouldn't let him know it, but she was glad they were going back that way. She felt uncomfortable knowing Thorn had no intention of keeping them safe. Shoving his slate back into his bag, Varen pulled his attention away from the others as they made their way towards the door. He reached over and snuffed out the lantern sitting forgotten on the table. At least this way, he would have enough time to think of something or some way to deal with Elias.
Undine growled with effort as she tried bending the bars once more. The edge of the lake was right there, barely out of reach. A torment left there to taunt them as they roasted in the baking desert sun. When the bars failed to budge, she dropped her hands and collapsed back to the ground. With each slow, ragged breath she took, she could feel the moisture leaving her body.
"This is absurd!"
She smacked her fist into the resilient cage.
"Do they plan on cooking us in this heat box?"
Using the back of her hand to wipe away the gritty sweat from her brow, Pyra looked up.
"Undine, please, calm yourself. Getting angry won't get us out of here any sooner."
Each word cracked at her sore lips, and turning her head, tugged at her burned and peeling skin. She had more to say, but her attention was pulled to the still, limp form of Vel as his head shifted in her lap. He was muttering something, his voice barely making it to her ears.
"What did you say?"
Vel shivered.
He was cold and hot. His thoughts made no sense. He could see Amy's status bars ticking up at an agonizingly slow rate, but he couldn't remember what they meant. Was it a threat? Where was he? He struggled through another breath, but was afraid he might swallow too much air and blow up like a balloon. Could he do that? He shivered again. It was so hot. Cold? His body felt like something was crawling inside it. He looked up into a face. That stupid face. He tried to reach for it, but his arm just flopped back down.
"Said, why are you wearing a dress?"
"Because I am the queen and I can. Do you have a problem with that?"
Vel cracked a grin, his eyes wandering aimlessly around in his skull.
"It's just a little odd."
She placed a hand on his forehead. Even in this heat, Pyra could feel the fever roiling off him. She glanced down at his bandaged arm for the 100th time. The entire area had become red and swollen, with thick streaks radiating out from the wound.
"He's getting worse."
Undine smacked the bars once more.
"I wish she would hurry up and die. I tire of his rambling."
She knew the dryad was just lashing out. Her kind couldn't last in these conditions, and this was her way of working through her fear. As a Selkie, Pyra herself wasn't much better off, but she would remain strong for them both. Vel tried to roll over, but that stupid hand pressed him back down. He chuckled and managed to grab that hand. That silly, stupid hand. He missed that hand. It made him sad. His head swam, and he could feel the worms under his skin again. He closed his eyes and moaned, his legs twisting weakly, trying to push him away from whatever was eating him. Pyra spotted several Cavalli walking in their direction, and she carefully removed Vel's head from her lap before struggling to her feet.
"Greet!"
she called out in broken Cavallian.
"Aid, friend, sickness!"
She wasn't even sure if what she said made any sense at all. It was easier to understand a language than to speak it. Undine drew in a long breath through her nose.
If they come close enough, maybe I can capture one, force them to let us free.
Pyra ignored the empty threat from her guardian and continued to push herself against the bars. The Cavalli drew closer. Their curiosity evidently piqued as they walked cautiously in their direction.
Please!
She threw out her hands, waving them around frantically.
Friend, sickness, thank help, need, yes.
Get behind me, Your Highness.
Undine moved to the front of the cage as she eyed their weapons warily. Pyra refused to move.
Peace, hurt not, friend, sickness, need, yes.
The Cavalli leveled their spears, thrusting menacingly towards them until the two women backed away to the rear of the cage. One of the creatures produced leather strips and moved behind them, reaching through the bars to bind their hands. Undine wanted to resist, but the look from the queen stayed her. Two of the creatures grabbed Vel by either end and hoisted him into the air, eliciting several mumbled cries of alarm as the man flailed weakly.
Vel, it's okay.
Pyra tried to step forward, but strong hands wrenched her back. She winced, but spoke again.
You're safe.
Safe.
Vel's eyes rolled in her direction, and he calmed instantly. He began mumbling, but his body went slack in their grip. A strong hand shoved her into motion, and Pyra stepped into line beside Undine as they followed the two Cavalli carrying the cyborg. Despite the occasional pricks in her back by spear points, she found herself enraptured by the village as they were marched through it. She would have thought the Cavalli, a race of insects, to be more utilitarian in their designs, but they expressed themselves in a festive and colorful fashion. The fabrics used for their tents were intricately embroidered with gently shifting hues. The space around the domiciles were ornately decorated with carefully placed stones and cultivated swirls of grass and earth. Baubles hung in the thousands from the trees, and everywhere she looked, she could see the beautiful markings of their written language carved into every surface. Her schoolteacher had told her no outsider was ever permitted to learn the script, as they believed written words to be sacred. Ideas that stayed, stories that lived, and emotions captured in time. As they walked, numerous Cavalli came out to gawk at them. Pyra thought many of them were simply keeping large beetles the size of dogs as pets, but as they passed a small gathering, she realized the beetles were their young. Like many of the lesser insects of the wilds, the Cavalli must go through several stages as they grow. The guards marched them to one of the large colonies of tents, where a massive canopy was stretched between a half dozen trees. But, just outside of the comfort and relief of the shade, their escorts forced Pyra and Undine to their knees in the sand and tossed the man to the ground beside them. Pyra made to lurch towards him, but her attention was pulled away at the flash of movement before her. All the Cavalli she had seen up to this point were primarily black in color, save for a smattering of those with tiny spots of brown or yellow. But these, sitting in seven bejeweled thrones, were the elder Cavalli. Unlike their younger, powerful counterparts, these creatures were, for lack of a better word, fabulous. One had chitinous armor so silver she could see her reflection in its smooth shell, looking eerily similar to the golden guardians near the perimeter of the oasis. Another, to her right, was thin, with four wings like a dragonfly, their body a deep shade of iridescent green flicked with specks of purple. That one there looked more like a giant praying mantis than a beetle, but his body was decorated with large swaths of magenta frills that erupted from beneath the splits in his exoskeleton. And, standing to his quivering height before her, at the center of the circle, was the eldest among the Cavalli. He sported dozens of antennae, each one long, wispy, and tied beneath his face coverings in a way that gave Pyra the impression of a grand beard. His jewel armor of blue had been repeatedly cracked through the ages, veins of gold running the length of each one to seal it. Despite their splendor, there was no doubt about their age. As they conversed with one another, their mannerisms reminded Pyra of elderly men and women, a shake in their hands, slow, intentional movements, even moving their heads closer to see better. Pyra pushed herself lower into the sand, speaking their tongue once more.
Honor, great father's mother's old, apologize.
Exhausted from having been hauled out to the council in this heat, the eldest of the Cavale stood and pointed his glittering staff at the pitiful creatures before him, calling for their immediate execution. What good were servants of a long-dead god to him?
Hold, no!
Pyra prostrated herself before the withered creature.
Queen, I, peace be bring, kill no.
She knew her translation was rough, but prayed it would get her point across. She peeked up enough to see that the elder had held up a second hand to stay the guard walking towards them.
What are you doing?
Undine hissed as she bowed beside Pyra.
Perhaps I can reason with them. Behave, and I'll do the talking.
Undine rolled her eyes, whispering,
What would I even say? Chitta chitta click click? I do not speak this language. Of course you must do the talking.
Scouring her mind for the words, Pyra found she was able to cobble together the rough sentence,
Please, not to kill we.
The elder returned to his throne with an overdramatic sigh. His old joints creaked and groaned as he lowered himself into his seat, leaning against his staff as he stared at the sulky woman before him.
Your Kivalian is garbage. Use your own tongue to speak.
Blinking in shock at his flawless command of her language, Pyra sat back on her legs. She wasn't sure where she was supposed to go from here, but as she looked over at the mumbling, pale form of Vel, she found her words.
You have my most sincere apologies. Your language is not one I ever put to memory.
I care not for apologies. Why have you attacked us?
Pyra bowed again.
We never meant to harm you. It was an accident.
Tearing off the arm of Mokturuk's grandson was an accident.
He tilted his staff in the direction of the frilled elder, who bristled.
A misunderstanding.
The elder bug nodded mockingly.
I see. So you are poor at words in this language as well. Is there a third you would prefer instead?
Pyra blushed. This wasn't going well.
Oh, for Ciara's sake, he attacked us first!
Undine tried to stand, but the butt of a spear shaft impacted her lower spine and she fell back to her knees. The elder turned his penetrating gaze on the dryad.
Ciara will not help you here, Treekin. Even she feared to walk where you have trespassed.
Pyra's gaze flashed towards Undine, giving her a warning look before she turned back to the withered old man.
Please, it was never our intention to discover your home. We do not even know where we are, save somewhere in the deserts of Uharia. A storm plucked us from our homeland and dropped us in a sea of sand.
There was a murmur from the other Cavale, as if confirming something they had already discussed prior. But the eldest simply ran a finger through his beard, twirling it gently as he rolled his words around his tongue.
And upon stumbling into our oasis, you felt the need to inflict yourself upon our people.
Like I tried to say before, it was all a big misunderstanding.
A thought occurred to her, a dangerous gambit.
As both our people know well, finding yourself far from home can play on the emotions and make you see danger everywhere.
An eruption of chatter swirled among the elders, their body language speaking more to the insult than any words she was able to catch. The magenta-frilled Cavale stood from his seat, the wings beneath his shawls giving an irritated buzz as he gestured at the others.
They should be slaughtered for their crimes. They nearly destroyed an ancient guardian and threatened to end the existence of one of our young.
The eldest Cavalli held up his hand, ordering silence. He had not reacted to her words like the others.
Keh, we know who you are, Queen of Ebra and Princess to the Selkies. And I see your gambit for what it is. But our situations are nothing alike. I was there when they came for my people and for yours. You were driven from your land for its resources. We were hunted to erase us from the world. Well, you were forced from your homes in the West. Your people thrived in this new world. Mine still waver on the brink of extinction.
He leaned back in his glittering throne, stroking at his beard.
But, enemy of my enemy, you make a fair point. Mayhap we can aid one another after all.
Pyra didn't like the hungry look in his tiny eyes as he cast about the other members of the council, chittering to them in hushed and hurried tones. A murmuring at her side pulled her attention from the moment, and she saw Vel drifting in and out of his fevered delirium. The eldest of them climbed to his shaking feet.
We have a caravan of shipment goods set to leave to a benefactor in a week's time. But we have agreed to send it early, and you will join it in order to return to your home. But know this, Pyra Fulcrave. You owe a debt that will be repaid. And when we emerge from our shroud to reclaim that which is ours, to take back Uharia from the humans, you and yours will be there to support us.
Before Pyra could stop herself, the politician in her came out.
And if we refuse?
Several of the armed guards standing near the flaps of the tent raised their swords at the elder's command, and he tilted his head towards the woman.
This is not a negotiation. You either agree or you die.
Swearing, she saw a smile lurking beneath the cracked mandible of the nearest guard. Pyra shared a glance with the dryad before she relented with a sigh.
Very well. When the time comes, the Ebrian army will aid you in the reclamation of your homeland. But first, I must ask of you another favor as part of our agreement. My companion is sick and in need of medical attention. Can you help him?
The elder's eyes cast over the writhing body. He spat, the glob of green spittle sizzling where it struck the ground.
If you had any mercy, you would let that thing die.
The old warrior relaxed back into his seat, gently clapping two of his four frail hands together.
Take them to the cenote, and may the Ancient One decide his fate.
Pyra felt herself and the others hauled to their feet, her bindings swiftly cut. But before she could argue on Vel's behalf any further, the magenta-frilled Cavalli stood and moved before them. He reached out with one of his hands and grabbed her hard by the chin, pulling her face up so that their eyes could meet.
But first, an eye for an eye for the crimes you have committed.
With barely a movement, he struck the queen's right arm, breaking the bones of her forearm as easily as snapping a twig. Ondine lunged, but despite his doddering appearance, the Cavalli's strength far outstripped his younger relatives. A hand flew out, catching her by the neck, and he hoisted her into the air, his gaze never shifting from the queen.
Pyra bit her lip, pushing through the pain enough to hold out her good hand in a placating gesture to her guardian. Stop! Lest you cost us more!
Ondine slowed her struggle, obeying. The elder nodded and released them both, shuffling back the way he had come. She bent, offering her hand to Her Majesty. She glared at the creature from the corner of her eye. but overwhelming the anger building in her was shame. She reached for the queen's broken arm, but the woman shied away. The rash decisions she had made had done that, not the elder. She had caused Pyra harm.
I will find something to make a splint.
As she stood, Undine noticed that the prince's duplicate was not where he had been moments ago. Vel had crawled halfway towards the frilled elder before collapsing back into his fevered mutterings. At least she wasn't the only overprotective one. Maybe she had misjudged him.
Atticus, will you hurry up already?
Piper stopped, shoving her hands on her hips as she spun on the spot, glancing back at two of the traveling party lagging behind. With a smile that stretched ear to ear, Atticus trotted up the remaining distance to his sister.
Sorry, the prince said he wants to read my Dragon Quest Chronicles, especially the one with the werewolf in it. He said it would be good research.
His smile dampened a little as several new thoughts occurred to him.
Do you think I should mention the werewolf is also a prince cursed by an evil necro-wizard? He gasped, looking back at Varen as realization dawned on him. Do you think that's why the prince can't speak? Some sort of evil spell? Or maybe he's a werewolf too?
I'm pretty sure Gramps isn't a creature of the night.
With a reassuring smile of her own, Piper placed a hand on her brother's shoulder.
There will be plenty of time to read your books and fawn over your characters after we found Vel and rescued everyone else in this reality.
She heaved a sigh as she looked back across the chasm. That cranky cyborg had better be okay.
Oh, look! My grappling hook is still there!
Atticus ducked up from beneath his sister's hand and jogged over to the tree where Unit 2 had tied the other end off earlier.
No, Atticus, you cannot cross on this rope.
She hadn't realized they were at the road already. They were making good time now that the storm had passed.
Like I said before, only an idiot would do that.
Winter stopped in front of her and pointed out across the chasm.
Speaking of which...
Help!
Varen had been busy flipping through the thick book the boy had given him when the sound of someone screaming caused his blood to run cold. He dropped his pack as his body lurched into motion. His feet carried him towards where the others had been, half ready to leap into the ravine, when he realized they were all there. He looked down, scouring the ground for his mentor, when he found the tiny merc perched atop the shoulder of the large machine. He signed, "What's wrong? Who screamed?" Evan responded with a lofty shrug.
"Dunno, wasn't us."
Running his hands through his messy bangs, Winter heaved a curious sigh.
Looks like one of them floaters? Is that what you called them? Well, someone is out there holding on for dear life.
In their absence, Varen had almost forgotten just how pampered and worthless these people were. This one, dressed in a dapper white suit splattered in mud, was clinging to the very center of the line, both legs locked tight around it and screaming his head off. Pinching the bridge of his nose, the prince heaved an annoyed sigh before grinding down on his resolve. He began to undo the fastenings of his cloak when a metal hand stayed his actions.
Sir, my apologies, but that rope may not support the weight of two fully grown adults. In the event that either tether should fail, you would likely fall to your most grisly demise.
His face formed a line, and Varen turned to the others of his group, hastily signing, "What now?" Winter was stroking his beard hair, losing himself in thought.
"Well then, I think we need someone small to head out there and bring that floater back this way. I can think of one person who fits that description."
Evan felt the burn of unwanted attention as all eyes turned in his direction. He threw up his hands, wailing,
"I don't know why you guys are looking at me. I can't carry him." my little compadre. You don't have to carry him. Just shoo him on back this way.
Listen, bub. Evan crossed his arms. I'm not risking no grisly demise for some schlub I never met before.
Gah, fine. I'll go.
Piper pushed up the sleeves of her shirt and turned to face the end of the grappling hook that had been tied off onto the tree.
Are you sure?
Atticus looked a little disappointed.
I'm not much bigger than you are, and I could leave my hat here to cut down on the weight.
No.
Piper glanced at Varen.
I'm the one who said we should split the party. He's my responsibility.
A smug smile grew on the prince's face as if he approved, and she responded with a scowl.
But if I die, I'm haunting you.
Slinging her legs over the rope, she began to climb hand over hand towards the cowering floater. In a way, it felt nostalgic. She had done similar feats of stupidity while making her way across the rooftops in Silverport, escaping police, finding the perfect vantage point to suss out a new target, or to simply take a moment for herself. The port city was filled with clothing lines strung above the streets between buildings, a street urchin's paradise. That's why she knew this was a bad idea. She still bore the scars from all the times the lines had broke.
Help!
Oh, shut it!
The man turned his head in surprise, noticing the young woman for the first time.
Help me!
She sighed as she stopped just behind him.
What do you think I came out here for? To pick your pocket?
When his eyes went wide in response, she realized that, yes, he had indeed thought she was here to fleece him. She sighed.
My name is Piper. I'm here to help. What's your name?
The man stuttered a few times before managing,
Frederick?
She nodded. From what she could see, nothing was actually wrong with the man, other than the sudden onset of a fear of heights.
Okay, Freddy, here's the deal. See my friends back there? We're gonna climb back to them, all right?
But we're halfway across.
And we know that half is safe.
Piper was worried he would see through the idiotic ruse. It was a rope, not a bridge. But Frederick's eyes went wide again, and he nodded quickly.
Okay, but you won't leave me.
Piper gave him as warm a smile as she could stomach.
I promise. Now let's go.
Bit by tiny bit, the fully grown man began to follow her back across the line. She had just reclaimed her confidence that they would both survive when the dumb werewolf called out,
"You got this, buddy! Just a little further!"
Frederick looked up to see a grinning face at the end of the rope. The smile sent something inside his mind screaming, and, shouting in primal terror, he began hauling himself hand over hand back across the chasm with no regard for his fear of heights.
Whoa! Stop!
Piper started giving chase, holding tight as the rope bounced wildly. She glanced up at the far end of the line. It was her turn for her eyes to go wide.
Freddy! No!
The metal harpoon that had acted as the far anchor wiggled up and down with each bouncing motion, working its way out of the tree inch by inch, until at last it ripped free and the line went slack. Holding on for dear life, the two figures swung down in an arc before smacking hard into the side of the steep chasm. Piper felt as if her skeleton had been jarred loose, the shock of the impact causing her grip to falter as she bounced back out into empty air.
Crap!
As she fell past Freddy, she managed to catch hold of his fancy jacket and swung back towards the edge once more. The extra weight was too much for Frederick, and his hand slipped. As they fell together in a screaming tangle, Piper managed to catch the rope with her metal hand, clamping it tight around the coarse fibers. The sudden stop of her motion caused the man to flail about and cling to whatever he could of her. She gagged, choking as his arm cinched tight around her throat, and winced at his endless shouting right next to her ear. In an ironic way, she wondered if this was how Vel had felt when he had saved her. She struggled to climb, but the extra weight and the pressure on her neck caused her to slide back down. It was no use.
"Hang on, Piper! We got you!"
She glanced up to see her brother leaning over the edge of the cliff. Then, the rope rocketed upwards, zooming them to the surface nearly as fast as they had initially fallen. The screaming was threatening to burst her eardrum when Piper felt herself hit solid ground. Coughing and hacking, she pried the man off and glanced over at Unit 2, who was still hauling the rope into his winch. She nodded her thanks in between wheezes. Evan kicked the still screaming man in the shins.
"Dude, you're safe!"
His screaming stopped, but Freddy couldn't uncurl himself from his fetal position.
"Thank you."
Evan crossed his arms. "Why were you out there to begin with?" Freddy peeked his head out from beneath his hand, staring at the others like a rabbit caught between a pack of hungry dogs.
Because of the dragon.
Dragon?
Atticus's smile grew as his eyebrows disappeared into his hat. Varen rolled his eyes and signed, "Dragons don't exist." Evan waved his hands furiously.
"Dude, why did you—"
From the north, a distant roar rattled across the chasm like thunder. The little merc sighed and finished,
"Have to say something."
We thank you for joining us for this chapter of the novel Of Portals and Portents, Book 4 by Leslie Herron in this ongoing series available here on Tall Tale TV. You can find links in the description to where you can listen to all her books and novellas, with new chapters appearing as they are being written and recorded.
"Which left the Dark Knight stranded in the Bog of Despair. And you think like, oh wow, he's gone for good. But then in Book 5, you find out
Whoa!
That...
Everyone, stop moving.
What? What's wrong? Where's the attack?
What?
No, no attack. I just spotted a bee on the ground and didn't want you stepping on it."
"A bee? Seriously?"
"Aw, poor little lady. Looks like the storm tossed her about something good. Here, let me help you. Come on, come on."
"Dude, it's just a bee. We're trying to save the multiverse here. Leave it."
"Just a bee? Hey now, without bees, we'd all be dead in 4 years.
"What? That's bull."
"Hey, if you want to argue with Einstein, be my guest. But meanwhile, I'ma help out my new little friend. Here you go, Miss Bumble. A nice, pretty flower for you to sit on and..."
"Holy spam on a cracker!
That plant just ate Miss Bumble!
Welcome to Ebwa, buddy. Well, you are literally the only vegetarian around, including the vegetables.
It bit my finger.
Let's go already." "Anyway, like I was saying, in Book 5 you find out it was actually the Squire wearing the Black Knight's armor."
Is this look infected?
I mean, what a twist.